So I said, well, Michael, I said, I've been having this thought that I just needed to come up here and take off all my clothes.
Oh, perhaps you remember that scene from the British documentary The End of the World Cult, which later became a National Geographic special earlier this year here in the United States. The infamous dishwashing scene between two young ladies at the Lord Our Righteousness Church in northeastern New Mexico. Here's a bit more.
And he looks at me and he kind of smiles. So I said, well, I said, shall I? And he thought for just a minute. He was quiet and, you know, I know he was listening for Father's instructions. And he said, you may. And so I did. And then he said he would hold me. And I hadn't even thought of that. It was just, that wasn't, I hadn't even crossed my mind. But
you just knew you need to get naked with
yeah,
him.
Yeah, I just knew that this needed to be literally physically naked.
Okay, as I watched that scene, I had to wonder if the photographer and the producer were thinking at that moment, I can't believe we're getting this conversation on camera. Hi, everybody. I'm Mark Horner, and this is Beyond90Seconds.com. Today is Monday. It's July 21st, 2008. If you have not seen that documentary or the subsequent National Geographic special, or perhaps you just want to watch the End of the World cult movie again, you can find it on this website, Beyond90Seconds.com. Just go ahead and enter it into the search box over there on the right-hand side of the blog. In that scene, the dishwashing scene, that young woman, and actually her friend as well, were both talking about what they alleged to have been these experiences they had where they got naked with Michael Trevesser, the leader of the church. His actual name is Wayne Bent. He's known to them as Michael. Yes, some believe he is the second coming of Jesus Christ. Well, he was very much in the courtroom this past Friday when he was arraigned. He has been recently indicted by a grand jury in New Mexico, charged with two counts of criminal sexual contact in the second degree with children, and two counts of contributing to the delinquency of a minor. If you haven't already, you can read more about Friday's arraignment right here at Beyond90Seconds.com. Just go to Friday's post, that's for July 18th, and you can find the information to include court documents and interviews. One person, however, I was not able to reach on Friday was the district attorney in this case. That's right, the DA for the 8th Judicial District in the state of New Mexico. That is Mr. Donald Gallegos. However, we did connect by telephone this morning. In fact, he returned my call, and I want to thank him for that. We've discussed a number of things about this case, but we couldn't speak case-specific, and he explains why. We could talk about what we can expect in terms of how the legal process plays out from here. And based on what I've heard from many of my readers, this is something that is definitely of interest because we're all interested in what happens next and when's it going to happen and what does this mean and what does that mean? Well, listen into this conversation from this morning, and hopefully we'll answer any of those questions that you might have. You can't talk about the specifics or anything related to the evidence of the case, correct?
No, I cannot comment on it in any way evidence or other things in the case that could potentially prejudice the case. One of the things you hear a lot about both prosecutors and sometimes even defense lawyers saying is, well, we don't want to try this case in the media. And so that's one of the things. It's mostly to guarantee the rights of the accused. But it also covers the rights of the state and even the victims to a fair trial.
And speaking of the media, this is a case that certainly has found the media spotlight, to include the national media spotlight, having been featured on Fox News, Larry King Live, and programs such as those. But again, your given approach allows you to treat it just like any other case. And it's a case, you told me a moment ago before we began recording the interview, that it's a case you're ready to take to trial, right?
That is correct.
Talk about, if you would please, some of the factors that must be considered before a trial date is set. Because as of this moment, there is no trial date, but there are parties involved and everybody has to get their house in order, so to speak. Is that a good way of putting it?
Yes. Certainly at the arraignment, it does a couple of things. It advises the accused of the charges against him, the potential penalties, and also of the rights that he has under the Constitution, and that's where the accused then also enters whether they want to enter a plea of guilty or not guilty. Generally, it's a plea of not guilty. Then, from that particular date, we have 6 months to go to trial by rule. It's not a constitutional right. It's a rule, a right that was created by rule to interpret the constitutional right to speedy trial. the factors we have to look at is docket availability, how long is it going to take the defense to prepare their defense, to do discovery, because we have to provide them everything we have. And then in return, they have to provide us any discovery they have that may tend to either exculpate or explain the charges or maybe negate them or do anything else. So we get involved in that process. The defense will then have the opportunity to interview our witnesses, and should they present any witnesses, then we interview them. The court has to look at its docket and see when the availability of the courtroom is going to be there, whether they have the courtroom, how long the trial may take, how many witnesses, how much evidence, either documentary or otherwise, is going to be there. So there's quite a bit of logistics to deal with before we actually get to trial.
Would the alleged victims be considered state's witnesses in this case as well as victims?
Yeah, I think that's the vernacular. That's you know, commonly how people refer to them.
And the readiness of the children is also a factor that you have to take into consideration. And based on our conversation prior to recording this interview, I believe you said that you believe the children are ready for this trial.
That's correct. I mean, we always make that determination when we file the charges, and especially cases involving that are very, very traumatic, and sometimes that involve children, we have to approach them a little more carefully, because you can't just go off and file charges if the individuals may not be either emotionally or physically or even mentally ready to be able to take the stand and tell their story. And so we always look at that, and we don't rush always to file charges. And prosecutors sometimes get a lot of criticism about that, because they say, well, if you know what happened or you have evidence that it happened, why don't you just file the darn thing and, you know, go forward with it? We have to look at, you know, was there any trauma involved to the alleged victims? Do we have to work with the therapist? Those kind of things.
You have a kind of interesting convergence of considerations here. Given the six-month rule and the fact that you have a judge, Judge Gerald E. Baca, who did not win his bid for re-election, therefore, at the end of December, come January 1, actually, there will be a new judge assigned to that bench, correct?
That is correct.
So,
we're also looking at the possibility that if we cannot get to trial within 6 months, then, you know, there may have to be a delay or an extension granted so that we can get it maybe sometime next year.
So is that what commonly would happen at the end of a six-month period where the rule has taken effect, the six-month rule, that if you don't get the trial within that six-month period, you go ahead and if you still feel comfortable with your case, of course, that's the presumption, then you would request an extension?
That's correct. You would request the extension from the district court, and the district court judge, the trial judge, has the power, the authority to grant up to 6 months of an extension. And if you don't do that and the six-month rule passes, then the case is thrown out of court. It's dismissed.
Who is the judge who will be taking the seat of Judge Baca come January 1?
I believe that it is Matthew Sandoval. I believe was the victor in the primary, and I don't believe that there's opposition in the general election, so I believe that will be the judge on the case.
So if the six-month rule, if the six-month period expires because of the timing of the arraignment, which was just here in July, in all likelihood, should you find yourself in that situation come January, you would be going to this new judge and asking for an extension?
Possibly, quite possibly, because obviously you have to deal with a judge who's new to the bench, who has to pick up a docket load from the prior judge, and may not be ready to have this particular case tried as soon as they get in there.
I don't expect you to be a betting man, but do you feel comfortable sharing your feel on this matter? Will there be a trial, do you suspect, prior to the six-month rule expiring, or do you think it's a toss-up as to whether we'll see this go ahead and move into the next calendar year?
Well, I think you have very good gut feelings, my friend, because that's something I wouldn't even want to bet on. I've seen so many things happen. Right now, the possibility that we go to trial before December, if I were to guess. It's really 50-50.
Somewhat like predicting the outcome with a jury. You just can't go there.
I would not. If I could, I'd be playing the lotto right now.
Right. I was speaking generically about that, not about the Wayne Bank case specifically. It's just you don't want to go into the business of guessing what juries will do. I would like to wrap it up then with this, and it is a serious concern. Some people have had serious concern for the safety and welfare of the people who live out there at that strong city church property. Is that a consideration of the state, or at least the state's district attorney's office?
Well, you know, obviously anytime we have neighbors who seem to be in the position where they might get harmed, it's a concern. And I know that at least maybe National Geographic or other news sources, I would say, or documentaries have raised the fact, that this might be a doomsday cult and et cetera and et cetera. Obviously, that is a factor. My primary focus, however, is on the case itself, making sure that the state presents its case, that the defendant is guaranteed all the constitutional rights that he has, and the victims are given all the rights that they have. I believe that I would just defer to local law enforcement as to whether there has been any information and as to whether there's any action being taken regarding that particular issue.
Very good. Mr. Gallegos, is there anything I have not asked you that you would like to add or share with us?
I think we've pretty much covered it, sir.
All right. You are the district attorney for the 8th Judicial District.
That's correct. That is Taos, Union, and Colfax counties.
You guys cover a lot of territory.
Geographically, it's very huge. Population-wise, 47,000 maybe.
Thank you very much for your time today, Mr. Gallegos. It's been a pleasure.
Right.
You've been very generous. Take care.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Right. Bye-bye. Once again, that was Donald Gallegos, the district attorney for New Mexico's 8th Judicial District. My thanks to Mr. Gallegos once again, and thanks, of course, to all of you for tuning in. Thank you for visiting Beyond90Seconds.com as well. Until next time, have a great day, everybody. I'm Mark Horner, Beyond90Seconds.com.